Hello, this is the Camp Hudson Media Group's Live by Life.
Today's guest is going to be Stephanie from
Bendelstift Family Circus.
You are listening to WTXC 90.7.
Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you guys today.
And the first question I have for you is, where did you grow up primarily, and tell us some of your childhood memories.
I was born in Queens, New York City, and when I was in fifth grade, my family moved up to the Catskill Mountains, so I spent part of my childhood in the big city, riding the number 7 train and playing stickball in the street, and then I moved to a 300-acre resort that my family purchased in the Catskills, and I grew up with lots and lots of elders. I had 5 or 6 different grannies or bubbies, and my sister and I ran around on 300 acres of woodland, and I saw my first animals. And I went to high school there and graduated and went right back to the city.
Is there any specific memorable moments during that, your childhood, that affected you and maybe stayed with you into adulthood?
Memorable moments from being in New York City include making up games out of nothing. There were probably 2 dozen children that lived on the short block in my neighborhood in Queens, and we would just take cardboard boxes out of the garbage and turn them into backyard theater sets and make plays. And it was in the 70s, and we all had roller skates with metal wheels. And I remember using a skate key to adjust those and flying down what we called Suicide Hill, which is a very steep street. And then in my later childhood, in the middle school years, I remember just being blown away by the woods and the stream, and I remember very clearly the first time I heard the ice breaking up on the stream on our property, how loud it sounded, how dark it was at night, how clear the stars were, the sound of 150-year-old enormous pine trees, boughs tossing in the breeze, seeing a deer very close for the first time. Those are the kind of memories that are really strong from that part of my childhood. We lived about 5 miles from the village of Margaretville, and in my early teens, I got a little rebellious and wanted to hang out with my friends, so I jumped on my bicycle and rode my bike into town every day because I couldn't drive yet. So I think it was a really good way to grow up, having a balance of city and country life.
How did you get into the circus?
I ask myself that question all the time. I went to art school in New York City at FIT. And when I was a student there, I got hit by a car right before my finals. And I had my wrist smashed so badly that I couldn't complete my projects. And I spent about 9 months recovering from that accident, and then I realized that the field that I was studying, which was jewelry making, meant that I was either going to be designing costume jewelry for the fashion industry or making engagement rings for the rest of my life. And the idea of sitting bent over a jewelry bench looking at such tiny little projects didn't really captivate me anymore, and I wanted to work on a bigger scale. And because my arm was broken so badly, I wasn't able to make little small movements with the tools that I needed to, so I started making big paintings and being able to use my arm in large movements. And I realized that I wanted to work big, and I started imagining performance art pieces, incorporating large murals and large-scale sculpture. And it happened at that time that I met Keith Nelson, who was a fire eater and a juggler, and we started to make large-scale sculptures that we could light on fire and incorporated movement into that performance. And it was out of those early days of fire-eating performances that the circus was born. So it's a long, long path to get to the circus tent for me.
So one of our friends who's not here, Rachel, wanted to ask you just that about fire, spitting out fire. Do you still do it? And how do you do it?
I don't do it anymore. Over about 20 years of lots and lots of fire performances, I developed COPD. I don't recommend doing it to anyone, although it's really fun. And but it's the price that you can pay physically isn't worth it. It is a technique. It's not magic. It is very dangerous. And the chemicals that one uses to both eat fire and blast fire are toxic and carcinogenic. If you don't do it properly, you will get hurt. And every fire eater gets a really bad burn at some point. And it's really necessary to learn humility because it's an element. Mm. And I don't miss doing it, but I'm glad I had the opportunity to work with that.
Well, what does fire taste like?
Fire tastes like chicken. Thanks, Tom. Also, it's got no fat and it burns calories. You could add some hot sauce in it if you like it. It's spicy.
How do you end up come to Hassan?
Is your name Chris?
Yes.
Hi, Chris. I'm going to answer your question as quickly as I can. I was living in New York City, and rents began to go up really steeply. And Keith and I started drawing circles on the map around our neighborhood, seeing if we could afford anything nearby. And we kept drawing bigger circles and bigger circles until we ended up in Hudson. I like it here.
Tell us about the after-school circus programs in Hudson.
The after-school circus program in Hudson was born in my brain first because, sorry, that's me moving my microphone. When I first moved here in 2005, I was struck by how few children and young people I saw on the streets here. And I wondered where they went to play and have community with each other. And somebody told me about Time and Space Limited. And I don't remember if Linda and Claudia approached us first or if we asked them if we could do something with the kids that they worked with at the time. And in, I believe it was 2006, we did our very first circus workshop here in Hudson with kids from TSL's youth program. And we did a few more of those. And then I was introduced by Joe Herwick from the Hudson Opera House to Trudy Becht, who was at that time directing programs at the Hudson Department of Youth. And Trudy invited me to create a program for the youth department. And that was 2009, and I've not looked back since. The youth program there has probably served 400 kids over the years, over 10 years. And it's grown into one in Chatham as well. And I also have a community-based circus program with adults at CoArc. And so I've been able to work in two different CoArc facilities on a regular basis, teaching circus and sharing what I love.
Did we ask when you and your partner Keith moved to Hudson? Because you said 06 was when, I guess, the first after-school circus program started. So
Keith,
when did you
I
come to Hudson, though?
We found our home here in 2004 and really began to make roots in 2005, mm-hmm. and are still in the same place. And I've seen a lot of changes, as probably you all have, in who lives here and who moved out and who's moving in. And our block is very quiet and kind of forgotten. It's out of the way. It's not a main thoroughfare. It's a dead-end street. So for a long time, it was very much the same. A lot of families with kids lived on the block, but now a lot of people have left. It's hard for families to live here.
That's a question we'll ask a little bit later. But tell us anything about the after school, I mean, how it's affected you, the kids, the city, et cetera, overall.
Circus After School is actually what's known as a social circus program, which means that instead of attracting customers or class members who can afford to pay for lessons in how to do cool circus stuff, the program is based on community funding, state funding, private funding, so that it's free and accessible to anyone who lives in the Hudson City School District and in the Chatham Central School. It is a way to empower youth and adults by letting them take safe, supported risks, try new things, work together with peers, mentor friends, receive mentorship from circus professionals. And all of the instructors who teach with me and myself have had a lot of training in how to teach a skill, a difficult skill, with an underlying system of values that includes respect, patience, a practice-based approach to learning that isn't about testing or attaining specific goals. It's about the process. We really value communication, community, collaborative creativity. And so this program is something that can be a useful tool in working with youth or adults who have experienced trauma, who have a difficult time communicating their feelings, expressing themselves creatively, working with others. And so we've made a real effort to try to make this supportive and accessible for folks.
Sounds a little bit of what Camp Hill does too, yeah. Yeah, and they teach you some things, right?
That's
you
right.
You mentioned that you were trying to learn how to ride backwards on a unicycle and somebody helped you.
That's right, one of my students.
Yeah.
Actually, he was so persistent in, what's the word? Rather than as a teacher, me aggressively encouraging him to learn this thing, he reversed that. And because I was ready to give it up, I wasn't that interested in learning to ride backwards. And he really wanted me to do it. He encouraged me every day. He asked me why I wasn't there yet. And I really appreciated that. To me, that showed that this kid not only had attained a skill level, a physical skill, but he had also developed enough confidence to challenge a teacher and creatively encourage another person to push themselves. That is exactly the goal of the Circus After School program.
Tell us how you teach circus skills and gymnastics.
And gymnastics? The way I teach circus skills and gymnastics is that I teach things that I know how to do myself, and I only teach things that I've performed and studied for many years. So I personally don't really teach gymnastics like flipping or walkovers because I've never done those things. I reach out to other highly skilled professionals who do have a strong background in that, and they do the teaching and the stuff that I don't know how to do. But I also, since becoming much more interested in teaching circus as an art form, I have pushed myself to practice things that I don't like to do and learn stuff that I don't like. So, for example, I don't like aerial silks. Everybody loves the silks. Everybody wants to see the girl on the curtains. I hate it. But I made myself learn how to do it so that if a student really wants to, I can show them the fundamentals.
What kind of music do you play in your performances?
Matthew, that's such a good question because we love music and we really like having live music in our shows. And I can't even count the number of musicians we've worked with, all different kinds of musicians. So some that are very classical circus, like kind of oom-pa-pa, oom-pa-pa, oom-pa, and some that are very experimental. There's a guy named Skip who uses a lot of very weird vocal techniques and effects processors on his voice, to uses noisemakers and toys, and he creates this cacophony slash symphony. But he also knows how to accompany, which is a very different skill than just making beautiful music. And so we've been very lucky to meet artists who are willing to sometimes lay back a little bit as a musician, to partner with the visual act that's happening. And that's really fun, because you without knowing it, you suddenly have a new partner in your act. So we're open to all kinds of music, and we've had everything from musical saw to toy piano, harmonicas, wind-up toys, multiple synthesizers, grand pianos, fiddles, you name it. Yeah, bring it on. Let's hear it. Yes, oinkers. Boingers, ringers, dingers, squeakers, squawkers, voices.
Doggy!
This is the music section of the interview.
Doggy! Goodness.
All right, now that we
encore.
Now that we're really serious, let's get back to being silly, okay? Well, I have this question here that also was from Rachel, who's away. I'll ask it this way though. You are kind of, meaning Bindlestiff, is redefining the word circus. Now there's still maybe this perception that circus means animals. And we won't get into how that's changed or is changing or already has changed, but tell us Bindlestiff's version of circus.
That's a really good point. And Rachel, when you listen to this, I just want to let you know that this is a very long-lived discussion that we've been having amongst ourselves in the circus world. And one of the things that I think is an issue in America specifically is that journalists, academics, critics don't really know how to write about circus, or haven't really spent time to learn about the full weighted history of circus as a performing art and its place in mystery, in right, in theater, in folk culture. It really straddles a lot of different spheres. And we never see that when it's written about in reviews. They'll send a dance critic to review circus, but the dance critic may not really have the full understanding of what circus is supposed to be. And so it's very subjective. And I've seen countless reviews and previews in which Bindlestiff is called not a real circus. Just want to say that I don't think the discussion is over. Real circus, in my estimation, is a very special place that can happen anywhere. It doesn't have to be in a tent, in a ring. It can happen when folks who are, how do I say it? People who have the souls of artists, the intellects of poets, and the bodies of athletes come together to push themselves beyond. And the critical, really important thing is that an audience is part of that. And so that the audience pushes themselves beyond what their expectations are. When you see somebody performing the most intricately complicated acrobatic routine or juggling performance, you understand that this is a human being who has worked and sweated and suffered and excelled, and that's very transformative for everybody involved. So what is circus? Circus is a place where that happens on a regular basis, and you're free to watch, and you're free to participate. Hopefully, in the 21st century, more people have access to participate, and that's why what I think, you know, social circus is about is expanding accessibility and contemporary circus as well. It's much more diverse and less conscripted.
It's a very, very wonderful, beautiful answer. Okay, my colleague Kai has asked me to mimic him and ask this question. This actually comes from a video that we saw. We all saw this video of you doing the TED Talk 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I'm improvising it a bit. But you talked about maybe the absence of young, say, college age or young folk out of high school in Hudson, that there was an absence at that time. And the question really is how is that landscape now in the city of Hudson itself? If you can remember that question.
Yeah, I can.
That statement that you, and I'm asking this on behalf of Kai, because Kai is 20-something.
When I first got here in 2004, 2005, I remember, again, wondering where are all the young people? And I certainly it was kids, because there I didn't see a park in Hudson where the kids were playing, youth, children were playing. But I certainly didn't see teens or young adults out and about either. There was no like social club or theater program or, you know, like movie theater right here on Warren Street, where I saw what to me, you know, like coming from New York City, I expected to see a diverse group of young, you know, curious, exploring adults, and, you know, making art, putting up posters everywhere, making music, doing performance art, and that I didn't see that here. And I think over the past, I mean, I've been here now for more than 14 years, and there's definitely been a change. I see many more students from Bard sort of like making themselves here comfortable here in Hudson. I've seen many more younger folks moving up from other parts of the metro area that are very unaffordable. And I've certainly seen, particularly through Camp Hill, I've seen lots of people from other places coming into Hudson and bringing different perspectives and worldviews in. What I still don't see is the Hudson community, born and bred, multi-generation, young folks, finding their place in the entrepreneurial climate that exists here. I think WGXC is one of the only places where you really hear the broad spectrum of who lives here and the different voices that should be heard, but I still don't see it as much out there, particularly in the last 8 years, 5 to 8 years. There's been a really great explosion of outreach to youth with organizations like Kites Nest, Greater Hudson Promise Neighborhood, certainly Operation Unite and Time and Space Limited have been very long-standing youth work organizations in the community, and there are so many more that are really elevating younger kids. I really hope that the local businesses can step forward and begin to extend internships and partnerships and, you know, learning experiences for these teens and young adults who are graduating, so that they can make comfortable lives for themselves here, so they can learn the tools that they'll need to go out and navigate their own creative visions. Excuse me. And lastly, I would love to see the city of Hudson invest more, less in our tourism and more in finding the kinds of cooperative, supportive, environmentally friendly businesses or industries that can develop a workforce. And then again, I think we would see a really strong presence of young people here, and particularly people who grew up here and, you know, maybe really want to stay but don't have anything to anchor them here now. Long answer.
But it's an important answer, especially those of us that are invested in this city, in this community. You want to read that next one? It ties into what was just being talked about.
How do you see the Hudson community evolving both economically and culturally in this decade?
That's another great question, Kelly. Certainly the political climate has changed a lot, or the cultural climate of Hudson has changed a lot. I think some really important shifts have happened around Black Lives Matter, around social justice issues, around immigration issues, and around economic justice and housing fairness. And I think that the community members who are banding together to address these issues and bring them to the forefront and try to get more community support for those issues are many, many of them are folks who have lived here for a long time, and they're like Hudsonians making Hudson for Hudsonians and making it better for new folks and visitors like me, you know. And I also am I'm blown away that in the past, you know, 5 years, we've had each one of our mayors has brought a different kind of diversity to Hudson. And with that life experience, perspective, you know, whether it be through gender orientation, race, everybody has brought with them a new perspective to what was for a very long time a very homogenized point of view or community. I do value the contribution of those former kind of heads of state here in town, but I also welcome change. I'm really embracing that. And economically, though, I don't see anything good on the horizon until we broaden our understanding of what a quality of life in Hudson looks like for everybody, and what fair employment opportunities look like for everybody. We don't have a decent, you know, bus route here that can get people to jobs, even if they get them. So I think we have a long way to go. But I think change is on the horizon.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Wow, Elijah, I don't know how to answer that question. I'm trying to stay in the moment. 5 years from now, I hope that I will still be doing youth and community work. Maybe I'll be more involved in advocacy and policy, not politics, but just kind of advocating for changes in policies about how funding is used, or, you know, how things like Airbnb policy is decided, things like that. I don't know if I'll be performing anymore, but I would always hope to be supporting emerging artists through the work that Bindlestiff does. We have a re-grant program. We have a couple of different platforms for showcasing and developing new work with the support of peers and feedback from peers. And I hope I'm still part of this big family that I love here in Hudson. One of my favorite things is walking up Allen Street early in the morning and seeing my neighbor Elijah on the front porch.
Right.
And I love how I can walk anywhere in Hudson and see you guys living your lives, doing your thing in Hudson. And I love coming to your performances. I hope to continue to be a very active member of the Hudson family.
So you said you couldn't answer that question, your future, but your short-term future. Now, I got to see last week the Helsinki Bindlestiff show, which I really loved. I mean, you were talking earlier about the skills and the dedication, this guy climbing up this ladder, this self-sustaining ladder, which was quite amazing, dancing on it, sliding down on the ladder, excuse me. It was a great show. So I thought, do you want to give a tell everybody the next upcoming shows at Helsinki, February, March? Yeah.
Thank you. I would have totally forgotten to do that. So I want to invite everybody to Helsinki Hudson for our show on February 22nd, which is, excuse me, it's a Saturday night. And March 21st, I believe, is also a Saturday night. Those are two more intimately scaled circus cabaret performances. We call them cabaret because that's what it feels like. The tables are very close. The artists are very close to you. There's live music. It's very beautiful, fun, witty music. And on the, and also, when is the last time, unless you've gone to Helsinki before, you had a trapeze artist swinging right over your head? That's kind of what happens there. On Sunday, the 22nd of March, we are also doing a matinee performance that's for youth and families. And I'm really excited to say that students from the Circus After School program will be presenting a pre-show. And it brings together folks from Hudson and Chatham who both learn the same skills and work together for the first time.
I've been to some of those. I've been both to the cabaret and to the family shows. Both are good in its own right. So so you all listening, come and see a local circus, bona fide circus troupe. I know it's bona fide because I've seen it. And yeah, we will say thank you and sign off then, right? Everybody, thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Stephanie.
For joining us.
That was an interview with Stephanie from the Bendelsohn Family Circus.
On WJXC.
Lift by life.
From Camp Hill Hudson Miracle Group.